I saw a bear.
A real bear?
A real bear.
Yeah.
Real
life. Where?
At Big Ben.
Over there? No, you're supposed to like do the whole thing. Over there. A bear? Where? Over there.
I don't know what
Nobody
that
knows that.
I don't know. That's some weird Ohio thing.
You don't know this camp, Scott?
No.
There's a bear. Where? Over there. And you get like a whole bunch of people and you do it all in the line.
You explaining it more does not make it more relevant to me.
Eventually, everybody gets knocked over. That's the whole point. Everybody falls over.
I don't see how that gets there. Okay, you see a bear, then a bunch of people get knocked over.
You don't understand it because you're not letting me explain it. That's why
I don't care if you hear you explain it. The more you say about it, the less interested I get. All right. Well, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're explaining how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff with me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here. Still pretty successful.
So much better with three.
I know.
There we go.
We got kind of tripped up a lot last week. We'd be like,
the intro was bumpy. Not gonna lie.
Please say something. Yeah.
And then Elise and I realized we only had each other to look at.
Like, moments of panic when neither one of us had anything relevant to say. Where's Patrick?
That's what I'm here for. Yeah. You know,
it was great.
The glue that holds it all together.
Quality podcasting. Right.
Yes. Good to be back in studio after a week at Big Bend.
Yes.
Max temperature 110.
That's hot.
That is hot.
Yeah.
That sounds awful.
Max temperature in Houston had a real feel of like 110. So,
yeah,
you know.
That's true.
Real feel, yeah.
But I also had air conditioning.
What was real feel?
And showers.
110. I mean, there's no humidity at all.
So we were all in the same
we're
boat,
all in this together.
Except air conditioning, mattresses, showers.
Right.
Sure. Yeah, no showers. And it's weird going to sleep at 10:30 and it's still like 97 degrees outside.
Yeah.
You know, like that's
that
kind of
uncomfortable.
Tough.
Yeah. It's like, it's pretty hot. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I did see the Milky Way.
Ooh.
So
and you were doing the Lord's work.
Doing the Lord's work. Had to wake up at 3 to see the Milky Way, but it was worth it.
Interesting. Yeah. It only comes out after
the sun. The moon had to go down.
Oh, okay.
So the moon
the moon cycle.
Yeah, we went through. My husband's like an amateur photographer, so we went through all of the science when we went to Big Bend.
Okay.
Last January, and it was like there's the dark nights and the moonshine and whatever. So I learned, I had an education on when the Milky Way might appear.
Yeah,
that sounds fun for you.
It did not.
It did not.
FYI. Okay.
Bummer. Did you see the Northern Lights?
I think we're a little far south for that.
I do have a fun fact, though. In the United States, in the contiguous United States, Big Bend.
Contiguous?
Contiguous.
The continuous.
I said contiguous.
I thought it was contiguous.
Maybe. I don't care what it is, but regardless.
Irregardless. Wait, no, that's not right.
Big Bend is the best place to see the stars in
the United States?
In the continent of the
United States.
Yeah.
Yes,
in the continuous U.S.
In the 48. Yes.
So excluding Hawaii and Alaska.
Excluding Hawaii and Alaska. I bet Alaska's got some
Puerto Rico,
pretty dark
and
places.
Guam
and
all those other protectorates.
Yeah,
I know you can see it like in Volcanoes National Park in Hawaii. It gets super dark.
It does.
And then you can,
Big Bend, the best garden. That's interesting. I would have assumed it would be somewhere up higher in the mountains where the atmosphere is.
Closer to the stars.
Yeah. The atmosphere is thinner.
A few thinner. Thousand
less,
feet on them.
There's less interference.
But
higher
there's
probably
you are,
more light.
Yeah, you can see more light.
Yeah,
yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Light pollution. Yeah. Listen to us.
Being all science-y.
I know.
Sure.
Spinoff podcast, Beyond the Milky Way.
As if we know what we're talking about. All right, I've got some news. Let's get to it.
I like Beyond the Milky Way. Can we do that as a podcast? I
wonder.
Talk about Snickers bars, Three Musketeers.
Okay, have you ever played fantasy sports?
No.
A couple times.
Yeah.
I'm not great at it.
Sure.
I'm better at real sports, and I'm not great at those. So. Just saying.
Yeah. All right. Well, in fantasy sports, there's usually a winner and a loser.
Yeah.
A winner sometimes wins a prize.
That's true in real sports, too, in case anybody didn't know.
I play fantasy basketball. Our winner wins a trophy. I won last year, not this year. Yes.
That's fun.
Yeah,
a little humble brag there.
Hey.
No,
does it come with a cash prize or is it
just a trophy.
Okay.
But we get to keep it for a year in our house. That my wife was like, you're not putting that up anywhere.
I was going
to
say.
So. Do you take pictures of yourself doing it? This is like a Stanley Cup situation where you like swim with it and you like take it to parties.
Put on a
and
green jacket.
Sure. But some leagues have a punishment for the loser.
Ooh, okay.
Which I very much can get behind.
Yeah, I'm on board.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this one, their loser in fantasy football had to spend 24 hours in a Waffle House.
That's not a punishment.
24 hours.
One day.
Midnight to midnight.
Yeah.
In
or worse, 7 a.m.
Yeah.
to 7 a.m.
Yeah.
That would be worse.
I think you'd make a lot of friends.
Would you?
Yeah.
Well, your Waffle House friends?
I mean, I think you'd have to.
Now,
you're not just going to sit at a table by yourself for 24
hours. It did have
and start talking.
You know, one little bonus here. For every waffle he ate, it was one less hour.
Oh. I would clear out of there so
waffles.
Quick.
Yeah. That's a piece of cake.
He ate nine. So
quitter.
Yeah. 15 hours, 9 waffles.
I mean, their waffles aren't like giant waffles.
No, they're pretty small. They're pretty flimsy.
And over 2 hours, you could easily put away 22 waffles.
Yeah, I think for two waffles.
That's a lot of like dough going into your stomach.
I'm not saying you're going to feel good, but you're going to get out of that Waffle House right. and you're going to feel better.
First 2 hours, I'd probably load up on 6 to 10 waffles, take a nap for a couple hours on that bench.
Find that bench,
and then wake start up over. And,
Okay, we're taking the Beyonce to a Waffle House. I want to see all these waffles you're saying you're going to eat.
Bring me 24 waffles.
Yeah.
And in under 2 hours, I will put them away.
Yeah.
That is not a problem.
24 waffles in 2 hours?
Yeah.
These aren't like Eggo waffles here, all right?
Okay, number one, Eggo waffles are not waffles. Let's just clarify.
I'm saying they're tiny little things. They're big plate-sized waffles.
They're not like okay.
They're very thin.
Question. Are we calling, because a waffle typically comes in 4 parts.
Is
each part a waffle?
Yeah, that's
or
like
is the 4.
Yeah, that's like saying I ate 4 pizzas when I ate 4 slices of pizza. Yeah.
Right, but no, you don't eat a slice. Okay. But like you get a waffle.
This is the waffle. I'll show you a picture.
Okay. So that's fundamental misunderstanding on my part.
I thought each one of those corners
was
a waffle?
I grew up with a square waffle maker, not a circle waffle maker. And so you would get 4
Have you ever been to a
squares.
Waffle House?
I mean, yeah, but I've never ordered the waffles at a Waffle House.
What? Hold on a minute. What
it's
do
in the
you
name.
Eat?
Okay. 24 of those would be tougher.
Do you get the hamburger at the Waffle House? No. I need to know this.
That's a good question. If you're not eating breakfast foods, what are you eating?
I mean, breakfast food. There are other breakfast foods besides waffles.
I mean, hash browns are amazing.
I'm feeling really attacked for a very reasonable choice. Yeah.
There was one period where Lee, that's the guy's name, sat in there and the entire staff went out for a smoke break, so he was alone in the Waffle House.
Just holding it down.
Just sitting there.
Cute.
I got it, guys. No worries.
Look, they built some trust over that time. He's made friends.
Yeah. He said it didn't feel like a Waffle Home with no one else there.
Oh.
That's cute. Do you know that the, what's the FEMA? The FEMA has like a real legitimate scale based off of when Waffle House is closed to determine the level of disaster
that
in certain areas.
That is fair. Yeah. I mean, we would use that in South Carolina. You know, Waffle Houses are all, I think actually the first Waffle House was in South Carolina in Charleston.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
The first one?
Yes.
Seems like an odd place.
I'm pretty sure it started. We'll have to look it up later.
There's so many great things that come out of Charleston.
I know.
Think that Waffle
Stephen
House
Colbert,
also came from there.
Waffle House.
Right.
Waffle House is amazing.
Mm. Okay. Mm. So you got 2.
Yeah.
And one of those is Waffle House.
Yeah, plantations. Yeah, okay. Right. Downhill. Yeah.
That didn't come out. Didn't come out of Charles.
All right, one more quick bit of news for us because I found 2 this week and I liked them both.
He's been on trip, so he's had some time.
Yeah,
yeah. So last Valentine's Day, a Ukrainian couple was having troubles in their relationship.
Do they celebrate Valentine's Day in the Ukraine?
Oh, sure, sure.
Okay, I assumed it was like an Americanized Hallmark thing. I didn't know it was a worldwide phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, they were having trouble, so they came up with a scheme to save their relationship.
I love it.
And then, unfortunately, they just broke up. Scheme did not work.
Okay,
predictable.
So they got like a year and some change out of it, though.
Valentine's Day was in February.
Last Valentine's Day, and that threw me off.
Like when was the last
waffle,
Valentine's
the
Day to you?
The 4 parts in the waffle. Okay.
Okay, it's not my fault that you don't know how. Neither one of you knows how waffles or English works.
I'm cool with it.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, their scheme was they handcuffed themselves together.
That was a terrible scheme.
For 123 days.
No one thought this was a bad idea.
Didn't work. Surprise, surprise.
You know, in no romantic comedy ever has someone said, you know what, we need to be closer together. We don't.
Yeah, we don't need space. We
need space. Yeah. I need to go to my uncle's in the mountains.
Now you can write a romantic
meet cute
comedy
in an airport.
Where they're handcuffed together, living in a Waffle House. Sparks fly.
Yeah.
Hating each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So they had to, you know, figure out taking turns, how to use the bathroom, going to work with one another. How do you sleep handcuffed to another person?
Yeah, how do you do much of anything handcuffed to another person? Yeah. Even like eating. Well, I guess eating you could kind of figure out as long as you're...
Hopefully one of you is
right-handed.
You're
missing the visuals
of
Pastor David trying to figure out how to eat handcuffed.
It was elegant.
It was.
Still have one hand free.
Right. I was eating with this hand, but then I was imagining like having this hand like just dragged all around while I'm eating with my other hand. That'd
be
complicated.
You just keep that hand down. You don't
hand?
You're the hand that's handcuffed. You don't need to be
moving
it.
It's handcuffed to someone who's trying to eat.
But then they
have
another
a free hand.
Yeah.
But then they're having to eat left-handed. If we're both right-handed, that's
maybe they're left-handed.
Right. that is a match made in heaven.
Right.
Match made in Hollywood.
Why did you break up?
We were both right-handed.
Yeah. That's true.
That makes sense.
It was never going to work.
Right.
Was it just one hand, or was it like both hands? Hands. They're in like a circle.
Just one hand handcuffed.
That'd be horrible.
So they're like in a permanent hug. They're right. Like, we're going to love each I'd other. Like,
they did set so a world record, though. No other couple has pulled off this kind of feat,
but,
surprisingly.
Yeah, because they've all broken up before. Yeah.
And they broke up in front of cameras, which I think was the whole reason they did this.
Yeah.
For some mild Instagram fame. Mm-hmm. And then
really, they broke up at like 90 days, but they stuck it out for the cameras. Yeah.
But they are selling the handcuffs.
Ooh. How much are they going for?
And it's an online auction, so.
You know, those things are like sweaty. And
they're donating a part of that to charity, though.
Oh, so how much are they going for?
I don't know. Oh. I could not find that information.
Okay.
I did not look.
Okay. Could not find because I did not try.
Right.
I like it. Yep.
It's not in this news article.
That's the kind of dedication you can expect here at Beyond Sunday.
Right. Hey, if one of our listeners wants to buy those handcuffs.
Absolutely. Go right ahead.
Yeah.
Please don't show them to us.
Yes. Or buy a Waffle House. And Pastor David would go there and eat his 10 waffles in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Even though they're giant plate-sized
waffles.
I did not say 10 waffles
in 20 minutes. I said 24 waffles in 2 hours.
Yeah.
Which I still am feeling like I could do.
That is insane.
The key is no toppings. You got to go no toppings.
I think I could do 10 in 2 hours and then sleep it off and start over.
There you go.
That you're both wrong. We're going to Waffle House after this and we're gonna find this
I'm out. On board.
I mean, you got 12 minutes to eat each waffle to do 10 in 2 hours,
but your stomach only has so much room. It's
my
all carbs.
Stomach is a force of nature, and
okay, whatever.
Look, it understands.
I just got a gallbladder removed. I got all kinds of room up in there.
My stomach is a team player. It's
right.
Ready to go.
All right,
let's get to our main story. Our main topic.
Elise's gallbladder.
This evening. Waffles.
No,
back to waffles.
We did that last
my
week.
Gallbladder story.
We're talking about denominations.
Yeah. Of money?
No.
$5, $10?
Of church.
Who's on the $20 bill? Do you all know who's on the $20
Hamilton.
Bill? Alexander Hamilton.
I saw the play.
I did not know that.
I saw it live. No big deal.
You saw Hamilton live?
Yeah.
No big deal. I still have not seen Hamilton in any form.
Yeah? It's on Disney Plus. Just right there for
and
your
she has still not seen it.
Wow. I haven't.
It's probably not going to happen then.
Do you not like musicals?
I'm
and
fine.
Or things that
no.
educate you about the world in which you live? Do you not like?
I'm fine. With musicals and educational material. I think I was resistant to it at the beginning because it was such like a thing, you know, like everybody was like,
I hear you.
OMG Hamilton.
Yeah.
And I mean, I wasn't going to pay several hundred dollars to go watch off Broadway.
I mean, I also didn't go pay several hundred dollars, but I did see it.
Me
right.
Neither,
I mean,
I'm,
I could
I'm a part
watch
of the world
it on Disney Plus or whatever. I just haven't. There's been like Outlander and
I will say it's good. It's worth the
educational
2 hours
materials.
Or whatever it is.
Yeah. It's very solid.
Yeah.
For a musical. It's really good. Yeah. All right. But we're not talking about those kind of denominations.
Oh.
Religious denominations. Church denominations.
Okay. Yeah. That makes more sense for our podcast.
Yeah.
This is from Lifeway Research.
Is this where we get to make fun of Lifeway Research, or do we do that later?
You can make fun of them whenever you want.
Okay. Just wondering.
The bookstore that is no longer a bookstore and is now apparently a research company.
They've always had a research division. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We're putting research in air quotes, as we say.
Right. Yeah. I mean, how skewed is this?
I have no idea.
Okay. You know? Well, we're going to talk about it anyway.
Well, this is what I found. So.
Okay. Let's go. What do we got?
They asked Protestant pastor their thoughts on the importance of denominations and how they believe denominations will fare in the next 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What are the thoughts?
Okay. That's what we're going to talk about.
So we've got until 2031.
2031. Yeah. That's when we're...
That's like a... Oof. I don't know why, but that just feels intimidating.
I don't like it. I feel like there's so many sci-fi movies set in like 2030 something.
We passed a lot of when sci-fi movies were set when I was a child.
But like even the modern ones, you know, I think some of them are happening in the 2030s.
Yeah. I'm just remembering like being in history class as a high schooler and talking about like, the 30s and all the things that happened in the 30s. I'm like, I'm going to live in the 30s.
Well, we're in the roaring 20s right now.
We are. My 20s are roaring.
Stink.
my 20s are great.
Well,
I'm in my 30s and my 20s.
Look, all I know is like 1970 was 30 years ago. 1990 was 15 years ago. 2000 was 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
2010 was 4 years ago. Like,
you can't tell me any different.
I don't know what anything is anymore.
Yeah.
Fine.
If you say 30 years ago, I'm definitely thinking that's definitely the 70s.
Yeah.
Not the 90s.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh.
Ick.
I don't like it.
Okay.
Lifeway.
So we can definitely say we've definitely seen some denominational disputes and splits.
We have. Mm-hmm. In recent years.
In recent years. We covered a major split within the Methodist Church. Mm-hmm.
Which is still playing out.
Yeah. Ongoing split.
Yeah. COVID slowed things down there.
Yeah.
as it did for a lot of stuff.
They should have just handcuffed everybody together.
Yeah. It would have gone great for 190 days.
Uh-huh. Just get all those pastors together, handcuff them up, put them in a Waffle House.
Right. You'll figure it out.
Yeah. Right.
You'll come out for the better. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so this question. All right. So let's take a look here. And let me ask you this. Is it important to be a part of a denomination? What do you think?
What do I think? As a Protestant, I was not pulled in.
You were not. You were not.
Oh, no. Yeah. Left out.
So you could say this strongly is completely agree.
Invalid. Okay.
Right.
Mostly agree.
Uh-huh.
Indifferent. Mostly disagree. Strongly disagree.
Okay.
I'm is this just options. Him or are you just pulling I'm him as a Protestant
I'm
going to
pull
pastor.
Both of you. The Protestant pastor
I'm pulling
in the room.
Both of you.
Right.
Oh, well, okay.
She's not a Protestant pastor.
Yeah, I don't know that my opinion is. I mean, my opinion is infinitely more relevant as a civilian.
Mm. They did ask the pastors what they think their churches think, which is interesting.
Okay, so
oh,
I'm going to start.
What they think their churches think.
Am I answering for my church or am I answering for
myself?
First
answer for you.
Okay, for me, I'm answering somewhat important.
So not the highest, but like.
Not the highest.
So
but, yeah.
If it's a 1 through 5, you're like a 4.
If 5 is the highest.
5 is the highest, yes. Okay, Elise, what do you think?
You said 5 is the highest importance?
Yes.
Yeah, I think I'd probably land solidly in the middle was slightly skewed towards important.
Yeah, I would probably be around the same thing. Like, between 3 and 4, but 3 is indifferent. I would probably pick 4 then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. What do you think the church thinks, though?
I would say at our congregation specifically, or like in the church at large.
However you want to take that.
Universal.
Your congregation.
Our congregation. So if I'm thinking about Lord of Life, I'm going to say that of active membership, maybe 55 to 60% would say 4 to 5.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And then the other whatever remaining percent is probably 3 to 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, that probably feels right.
And I would say the majority of people who are higher on that are probably have been connected to a Lutheran church for a long time.
Yeah.
In some capacity.
So older people.
Not necessarily older, but you know, they've grown up in a Lutheran church or you know, so they might only be in their 30s or 40s, but you know, they've grown up in the particular Lutheran church.
Yeah. I mean, I think like on a global scale, like when you think of Christianity as a whole, I think that a denomination is not that important. I would say that number drops significantly for
me. Yeah.
But I think for me and my interaction with the church, it's very valuable to know sort of what we corporately believe and stuff. You know, I've had a lot of experience in non-denominational churches as well. And I'm like, I don't know what the stance is on anything. What's the official, like, what do we stand behind and what do we not agree with?
So
that can get very murky, I think. And for me, it's helpful to have, like, you know, we have social statements and stuff that come from the ELCA, and I really appreciate those.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I years ago was, you know, looking to work at a church again. So I looked at some non-denominational churches and looking at their websites and trying to figure out, like, what do you guys believe is real tough?
Yeah.
Like,
especially because they all kind of have the same thing, which is like they talk about like the Bible and God and things like that. But I'm like, yeah, but like what about women in ministry, LGBTQ members? These are the questions people really have.
Yep.
Like,
right. Yeah.
And they're not saying anything.
Kind of the running joke is that non-denominational is Baptist, but they play rock music and sometimes they dance and drink. Right.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, but everything else is
they're Baptist,
fall
but they don't
solidly
want the baggage of Baptist.
Right.
Yes.
Or the oversight of Baptist. If
right.
I may. Yeah.
Right.
Which is not that great anyway.
Well, but I think there is a lot of resistance. I mean, at some level, I think there are a lot of churches who don't want the oversight of a larger body telling them this is what we believe.
Right.
Like, or, you know, there are some places where we say, well, I mean, we don't agree with what the church thinks in New York or what the church thinks in California. We want to be the church that we are here. Right.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of resistance to that, too. Yeah.
And I think, bouncing off that, even in the ELCA, I've heard that sentiment many times from members here at Florida Life.
Sure.
You know, the ELCA, their largest body is going to be North. You know, Midwest.
North Midwest, yeah.
Yeah, so Minnesota, that area is going to be the largest group of Lutherans in the ELCA.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes it's weird coming down into Texas where we have different culture, different understanding of how the way works. And I know some members here felt somewhat left behind in how the national body moves forward, and they're not quite ready to move forward at the same lengths.
Yeah.
And it's tough. And, you know, I'll just say the national body is not inerrant, right?
Sure.
I mean, the ELCA is going to make mistakes and has made mistakes plenty and continues to make mistakes. But I still lean towards its value. And there are a number of reasons that I think that. I don't know if we want to get into that now or if we've got some other research that we want to get to first. Or do you want me to start listing why?
No. We'll go into some data here. Okay.
All right, data.
So About 8 in 10 Protestant pastors think the denomination is important. It's vital.
8 in 10. Okay.
Vital.
8 in 10. Okay.
80%. Huh. Yeah.
Most of them are, you know, somehow having their retirement funded by that various denomination. So and there's some of that.
And so 8 in 10 would have at least a 4.
Yeah. Yeah.
Over 50% have a 5.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
All right.
And then those other two are just disgruntled and ready to go.
Yeah. And then 20% would disagree.
Okay.
And 2% not sure.
All right. Seems weird to be in that 2% of, I don't know how I feel. Like, it feels like this is one that you should have an opinion on.
They might be going on a journey of self-exploration at this point. Sure. You don't know their lives.
Yeah. And they will kind of fall in line. Their beliefs about the thing is what they think their church believes.
Yeah.
You know, so 78% of pastors says this is vital. They think 77% of their congregations.
Yeah.
You know, so it's gonna line up pretty connected.
Yeah.
Pretty
I would say quickly. I probably lean stronger towards the importance of it than the majority of Lord of Life. I would say the majority of Lord of Life probably does not care about denominations as much as I do.
I would actually go the other way with that.
You think?
Because I think we're a pretty heavily liturgical denomination. I think people really buy into that.
But do they care about the body of the denomination, or do they just care about the execution of the particular tradition and practice? Does that make sense?
I mean, I think people find a lot of identity in being, fair. Like Lutheran and the theses and the boom boom the
theses.
Yeah.
Okay. With the, I heard an F instead of a TH.
Oh.
Yeah, and so I was just very confused.
Feces. Right.
Do you want
to
guess?
Sorry not to say it, but yeah.
Which Protestant denomination is most likely to say being a part of the denomination is vital to them?
I'm not looking, sorry.
Elise, I want you to guess first.
Most likely to say it's Protestant, right? So not Catholic. Yeah, okay, because that would be my first choice.
Actually, I do want to hear what like Catholics think about this. That would be
they only did Protestants.
I know, but I would just be really curious because Catholics would basically say, "Yeah, you're all none of you count, so it's fine."
Yeah, not you, but for them, it's important. Yeah,
yeah. Our denomination, the one body of Christ, as they would
say. Okay, so who thinks the denomination, like their own denomination, or in general?
Most likely to say being a part of the denomination is vital to them.
So it's not that personally. Their denomination is the most important. But which denomination has the most people who are likely to say denominations are important? So Lutherans, Episcopalians, Methodists, Presbyterians.
Actually, I would say Presbyterian.
Really?
Yeah, because, well, the reason I would say that, because Baptist is my natural place I go to for this, but there's so much non-denominational offshoots of Southern Baptist churches, and they seem to not be bothered by that, really, right? Like, they kind of accept, you know, all that. But Presbyterians were very, I grew up Presbyterian, but there's a huge demarcation between like the PCA and the PCUSA, and there's this big people in the PCA are very like uptight about people in the PCUSA being, you know, way more liberal and all this stuff that they see as, you know.
We had talked about this off air, but I would have guessed Episcopalian.
Yeah, it's actually Lutheran. Yeah. So 95%, really? 95% of Lutherans, Lutheran pastors that they interviewed. So
interesting.
We can go to I wish they gave us more data here. That's the one thing. Look, out of all the problems I have with LifeWay, this is
this
thing.
This is it. Right. This is the sticking
straw that broke the camel's back.
Restorationist movement are the least likely.
Restoration.
And I read
what
that.
Is
and I'm
that?
Like, oh, what now?
bonnets and.
Yeah, I'll give you a little bit more data here. Mainline pastors are more likely to identify with the denomination. So that would be your main lines would be Methodist, Lutheran, Episcopalian. You'd say these
usually
more
Presbyterian,
progressive churches, a little more left leaning, WASPy. You might land on white Anglo-Saxon Protestant.
Not to be confused with hornets or
I've never heard that before.
Other pollinating insects.
Yeah. Insects. So they're all about 92%
before.
For white Anglo-Saxon
Protestant?
No, I haven't.
Oh, wow, that's fascinating. Okay.
evangelicals come in about three quarters, 75%. Okay. So, and those would be the two major branches of Protestantism. So,
yep.
Yeah.
In the United States,
So it's mainline and evangelical. Is that the line we draw? Okay. Yeah.
And then Catholic would be the third in the United States. So, okay. Let's talk a little bit about denominations beyond the study.
Ooh, okay.
Beyond the Sunday.
So do we want to say why we think they're important or why we think they're useless?
Maybe let's give a quick history lesson.
There's both.
Yeah.
Okay, history.
Of how do we get so many of these guys?
Well, once upon a time,
ooh,
a young Martin Luther was born. And then, Martin Luther would have been the first official, I should back up from that because my Eastern Orthodox friends are going to be upset.
I was going to say, there's also branches
If we go back, we have the body of Christ with Jesus, and they have the 12 disciples around for the Last Supper, and then they gather together, and there's Pentecost, and that's like the birthday of the church, and that's basically the last time that there's one true unified church is at Pentecost.
Okay.
And then from there, there's, you know, that's a bit of an exaggeration, but local congregations pop up, and there's no like overarching body. Nobody reports to one another, but everybody's kind of figuring out the spirit for themselves in all of these different places. Eventually, as those areas grow, we start to get like local bishops, but this is still all underground. Mm-hmm. And then eventually you get Constantine, and again, you know, we have now Christianity as like the thing. And so then there becomes a bishop of Rome, and we have this centralized body that says we're in charge and you got to follow all of our rules if you want to be part of the Roman Empire. You got to follow our rules. Mm-hmm. So that's how we get like the Roman Catholic Church.
Right.
And then eventually out of that Roman Catholic Church, there's a split and we get the Eastern Orthodox and the Roman Catholic Church. And out of the Eastern Orthodox, there's a bunch of branches that I don't know the history of that side.
Sure.
Yeah. But Martin Luther for us as Protestants coming to the United States is where we would get our split. And so Martin Luther is actually excommunicated from the church because he attacked the money stream. And then after he was excommunicated, he did a lot of this work that we developed around this theology of grace and that it's justified by faith and not through works and all this stuff. And so that was the kind of first movement of a denomination that was considered a faithful, well, it wasn't considered by the Catholics, but by themselves, was considered a faithful body of believers outside of the Roman Catholic Church, but still in the European continent.
Umbrella.
Yeah, continent.
Sure. Yeah.
And then so out of that, once people saw that that was a possibility, that you could just be like, oh, wait, we can just get our local authorities to say we don't acknowledge the authority of the Pope anymore, and then we can do something else. Cool, let's do that.
Yeah.
And so then you had all sorts of other things start to pop up out of that. And so you got Anabaptists who popped up, which are not actually connected to modern Baptists. You got the Anglican Church, which is eventually going to turn into the Episcopal Church in the United States because, you know, there was a king who wanted to get divorced, and he's like, well, I'm just going to start my own religion, and, you know, did that.
Right.
And so that all carries over as those European people start to migrate over to the United States. They bring with them their localized denominations, and then it continues to grow here in the United States. And so in the United States, you get growths of things like John Wesley went to the Methodist Church.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't know the full root of the Presbyterian Church. It's somewhere in there. And things just kind of keep popping up. And a lot of it happens over people saying, well, now that I can, you know, now that Martin Luther has started translating the Bible, and so we've got all these different versions of the Bible now floating around in different languages, mostly in English. King James is still kind of the main authority, but it's now in English, so I can read it for myself. And we now have more people being literate, so we have more people reading the scripture. They're like, oh, well, I can interpret it myself, and now I can interpret it the way I want to. And so I disagree with your interpretation, so I'm going to go over here, and I'm going to start my own church. And then once we get a little big, we're going to start another church over there. And hey, look, now we're a denomination. And that's kind of how that split up.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, early on, you know, majority of these arguments were over major issues, things like baptism or communion or what the significance of how one gets to heaven.
Right.
You know, becomes a follower of
Jesus. Can we buy our way into heaven?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's
tough to say.
Yeah.
But yeah.
You're welcome to try.
Right. Sure.
Good luck.
Maybe Jeff Bezos. I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't.
If anybody can.
He's going to space. Probably. So maybe he's going to. Yeah. Maybe God's up there. He's like, I got some money. So. Yeah. So, and that's kind of the history of denominations.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's why we
According
to Pastor David.
Yeah.
And then within denominations, we have sub-denominations.
Sure.
And sometimes, you know, you would say like within like the Lutheran Church, you found out there are like 30 different.
Yeah, there are over 30 active Lutheran denominations in North America.
Okay. We usually talk about like a big three.
Yeah. So if we're talking about the big three, we'd have the ELCA, which is what Lord of Life is a part of. It's Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is the second largest, and then the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod is the third largest. And kind of they move kind of progressively more conservative across those three, right?
I was going to say that's very confusing because we're the ELCA, Evangelical Lutheran Church of America, and you typically associate conservatism
An important thing to remember is that we are the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America in the sense that the original church that Martin Luther started was the Evangelical Church. They were the Evangelical Church in the sense that evangelical is rooted in this, is a translation of good news. So it's literally the good news. And so we are supposed to be the good news church.
Right.
As opposed to evangelical as it's come to be interpreted in the United States as a, I don't even want to get into what evangelical has been termed or interpreted.
Well, I think we can even say like within these Lutheran denominations, like when we look at commonality, in some ways we would find more in common with different belief systems about theological issues, but more beliefs, the similar belief systems about social issues. So we might find, hey, we have more greater unity and understanding with the Episcopalians or parts of the Presbyterian
Anglicans,
Church than we would with members of our own Lutheran denomination. And they might look around and say, like, you know what, we found more in common with the Baptist Church than we do with the Lutheran Church, even if on Sunday morning we kind of sound alike. Like, but how we see the world, you know, we're kind of... There's a pretty big gap between the ELCA and the Wisconsin Synod Lutheran Church.
Sure.
There's there's a pretty big strides beyond. We use liturgy to guide our worship.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, we both have that, but after that, it gets pretty wide.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, did Martin Luther screw it all up for all of us?
Ooh, man. In some ways, yeah. But I don't think it was Martin Luther's fault, right? I say that because Martin Luther did not set out to start a new church, right? Martin Luther was excommunicated because he tried to reform the church that he wanted to be a part of. And the papacy at the time, who was definitely corrupt. Like, even the Catholic Church now would be like, oh, yeah, that papacy was totally
not
corrupt.
Great. Yeah.
Right, you know, so that papacy said, no, we're just going to get rid of you. And that, I think, is more of the instigator. I mean, maybe this is me trying to protect some of my own heritage. I mean, Martin Luther did a lot of stuff that was wrong, right? He had a lot of anti-Semitic writings that are terrible and have led to terrible things, and we got to own our part in that. And other, you know, parts of his theology were not stellar, and that's fine. But I don't think at its core he wanted to start a new church until he's like, all right, they kicked us out, so we're going to keep talking about this grace thing because this grace thing is too important to stop talking about.
Yeah. I mean, who knows how long that would have continued, like that corrupt system being the only option for people if something like what Martin Luther did hadn't happened, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know that it's necessarily a bad thing overall.
Yeah, I think eventually, I mean, just in the progression of how we've seen history, I think it would have happened. If it wasn't Martin Luther, it would have been somebody else.
Yeah.
It happened to be Martin Luther because he came along at the right time in the right set of circumstances and, you know, happened to be the right personality to carry it forward.
It was a powder keg, and somebody was going to be that spark.
Yeah, he had a fire under his butt, so.
It just ended up.
At the end of his life, a little bit more literally than you might have anticipated.
Yeah. We should talk about that
fun facts from Martin Luther.
He had some interesting bowel issues at the end,
which he shared very freely,
very frequently. He was very open about his illness.
You can do that on Sunday morning in your next sermon.
Please
let me all give you the last 5 years of Luther's life.
Or your own life. You can be like, I got slides.
It's a preview. Don't do drugs.
Anywho, that got weird.
So let's talk about maybe moving forward,
because
they asked pastors this too, like, is the denomination going to be important moving forward?
I think that's a reasonable question. And I think there are a couple of things to think about in that capacity. I mean, before we have to think about if they can go forward, I think we have to identify what things are good about denominations and decide if those are things that need to be carried forward.
Okay. So what's good?
So for me, what's good is there's oversight. And, you know, denominations often fail at this or don't do it as well as they could. But knowing, you know, as myself as a pastor at Lord of Life, knowing that there is someone who will hold me responsible for my actions if I am completely screwing something up or abusing my power or anything like that, that is valuable to me. I think that's an important thing. There's also resources that congregations can share with one another that they couldn't, at least in the network of how we've set up churches in the United States currently, they don't have another way to do it. And so we can partner with congregations all around the world. We have partner congregations in Peru. Our synod has a partner, a synod in the Central African Republic, right? And so we are connected with churches and congregations all around the world in a way that Lord of Life on our own would not be able to do. We also are able to pool resources. And so, you know, our denomination as the ELCA funds Lutheran Disaster Response. We fund Lutheran World Relief. We feed into the Lutheran World Federation, which has global organizations as well. And so we're doing projects and work in parts of the country that Lord of Life has no access to, and in parts of the world that we have no access to. In fact, Lutheran Disaster Response and Lutheran World Relief are regularly rated as two of the top organizations for disaster relief as far as like giving your funds to them, because they are funded by, because they're funded by churches and by the denomination. Any money that people donate in emergency scenarios, like, it's like 99.99999% goes straight to the areas in need. And we're able to do that because of the generosity of the denomination, right? Not of any one individual. And so I think those things are really, really valuable. I think there's value in being able to offer a Lutheran perspective on national issues in a way that a local congregation can't. I think there's value in being able to lobby for our position as people of faith in a way that Lord of Life on our own cannot. I think that's valuable. But I think some of those things are also leading to the demise of denominations.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, there's definitely value if people move. Yeah. And you're like, where can I find a church home?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I felt good and at home in the Lutheran church that I was growing up in. Now I've moved to a new city.
Sure.
Let's find one that has hopefully a similar vibe and start there. You know, so I think that that's going to be a good first step in finding a new church home whenever you move somewhere.
Yeah.
I think that's a valuable piece to me as somebody who comes to a church primarily to learn, right? Mm-hmm. I am in a position of leadership-ish, but I'm not, you know.
Well, you're on this podcast. So.
Yes, clearly a position of leadership. Thank you. but, you know, I'm mostly showing up to engage with church as like a consumer, right?
Yeah.
So it's I find a lot of value in that sort of corporate statement of what we believe as a church body, because there's no fear that I'm going to show up and you're going to sell something to me as truth that I truly do not believe, right?
Yeah.
So I know like kind of what the basis of belief is. Yeah. And I think that's valuable. Also, when you were talking about, you know, moving and trying to find another church, I could probably find that same type of umbrella belief system somewhere else too.
Yeah.
So I think that that's an important or a valuable piece of denomination.
The other thing that I'll add, clergy transitions. I mean, we're in the midst of a pastoral transition at Lord of Life right now. And that whole process is overseen and supervised by the denomination.
Yeah.
And so congregations can have a level of trust and comfort in any candidate that they interview that they have met a certain level of qualifications.
Right.
And they don't have to play an HR department, right? They don't have to like vet hundreds of people and try to determine if they're telling the truth or not on their stuff, because they've already gone through that whole process.
Sure.
And so the piece that brings up is, I think the larger a congregation you are in, the easier it is to feel like denominations do not matter. And when you're in those smaller local congregations, and this might feed into why Lutherans think denominations are so heavily, because the majority of Lutheran congregations worship with an average of 100 people on a Sunday.
Yeah.
Right. And so when you're at that size congregation, you probably have one pastor, maybe a couple people on staff. You don't have the capacity to have a huge HR search to try to bring in the best candidates from all over the country. And you don't have the capacity to figure out, well, what should we be paying a pastor? What's an appropriate rate? And how do we make sure we get the best pastor and not, you know, someone who went to a really accredited theological institution and didn't just come off of, you know, some online degree. Not that online degrees are not valuable, but didn't just come off of, a 2-day crash course in theology, right? And so I think that when you're in that smaller context, the denomination matters more in those moments, because you have more resources at your access that you don't have as an individual or as an individual congregation.
And that feeds into like the pastoral oversight that you're talking about as well, because I think we've actually talked about on this podcast a couple of situations in non-denominational churches, right, where that position has been abused, and there's stories of pastors disappearing for months at a time, funded by the congregation and not preaching and showing up whenever they want to and that kind of thing. And that, I think, especially if you are a small church with fewer resources, that can be really devastating, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, and it's devastating to a large congregation for sure too, but you know, if I started doing that, right, the congregation would have a resource in the synod to say, Pastor David's gone off the deep end and we need help. And they would be able to provide resources to protect the congregation and to help end that relationship in a way that's easier. You know, if you get into a congregation where the pastor has all the power, it can be really hard to fire that pastor. I do not have all the power at Lord of Life. It's hard to fire me, but it's not impossible to fire me. And there are people who can walk through that process if I'm really screwing that up.
Yeah. So we talked about some good. Let's
also, we should say, it's hard to fire me is not meant as like a challenge, just to be clear.
Like that's everybody's like, all right, here we go.
Let's find out how hard that actually is.
Personnel committee. Flexing.
All right, let's talk about some bad. You know, let's briefly go over what are the bad parts of maybe denominations.
I think we get into tribalism, and we forget that we're ultimately still one or part of one body of Christ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's not great.
Lots of finger pointing.
I think one of the ways that I do think denominations will go in the future, because I do think we're going to get more, not less, is they're going to become more regional. That we're seeing the United States no longer really looking as unified across the board as it maybe we could pretend it was.
Yeah.
Then that means that, you know, take the Lutheran Church, for example, Lutherans in California versus Lutherans in Minnesota versus Lutherans in Texas mm-hmm. all have very different needs at the congregational level yeah. and mm-hmm. different points of view. And so I think we're going to start seeing, hey, our point of view is not as well represented on the national yeah. level. So we're going to have to start finding our own,
yeah.
you know, our own voice here. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily think that that's terrible. Like,
yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, if that's the move that it makes, it'll just be interesting to see how they collaborate and allow yeah. for, I'm thinking clergy in particular, but allow for kind of partnerships between those yeah. regional denominations if we want to. So if we have the, you know, what we have now is the Gulf Coast Synod. So if we became mm-hmm. the Gulf Coast denomination, right, mm-hmm. or the Lutheran Gulf Coast or something like that, you know, would I be able to go back up to Ohio and would my yeah. accreditation be able to go to the greater Ohio region of Lutheran churches, God yeah. bless America, whatever they would call themselves? I don't know.
Sure.
You know,
it's a mouthful.
Yeah. it always is. But, you know, would I be able to go up there? Yeah. Because if you don't have that kind of collegiality, I think what you're going to end up with is a whole lot of these small regional denominations that are going to say, we can't get any pastors because there are a lot of areas where pastors maybe don't want to move, or maybe they're not going to have the financial resources to be able to move there. Yeah. And then I think you're going to end up with a glut in, you know, larger cities and centralized areas where spouses can get jobs or where they can afford to live and things like that. And then mm-hmm. you might not, I think it's going to be a mismatch in a way that, like, right now, I mean, it's a problem, but we can avoid some of it because I can go to a small rural town or I can go to a big city and my yeah. accreditation is going to be the same wherever yeah. I go. Or I can go to the Northwest or the East or, you know,
sure. Yeah.
As far as the East is from the West.
Yeah. I just definitely fall back on, I think that, that the challenges of the Lutheran Church in Alabama are yeah. very different
oh,
than the challenges of the Lutheran Churches in absolutely. Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Like, and having one unified vision is pretty tough. I mean, yeah. like, it's pretty tough here in yeah. in America. And so I think we're going to see more splits there. And I use the yeah. Lutheran Church because that's what we're a part of. But
no, I think that's helpful. And I yeah. think, you know, we are a part of synods, which comprise the ELCA. And so mm-hmm. we have some of that kind of built in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think maybe what we'll see, as opposed to like a whole bunch of different ones within the ELCA, we might just see a decentralization of that kind of authority within the central office, which is currently located in Chicago, right? And so if we just decentralize some of that authority and we put more authority on the local bishops, you might see more of that, but still having that collegiality from one area to another so that individual areas have more ability to address their issues in their capacity. I don't yeah. know. That's another way that might shift
it
out.
It sounds a lot like feudalism.
Kind of.
It kind of will. And I also think since now a lot of the divisions within churches are not driven by theology, but yeah. by social issues, yeah. I think that's also mm-hmm. going to cause, you know, a lot more divisions within congregations. Again, mm-hmm. a small yeah. Lutheran church in Alabama versus a large Lutheran church in Denver are going to have very different yeah. perspectives on how the world works.
Yep. Yeah.
And eventually that's kind of, it will have to come to a head. It's coming to a head right now in the Methodist church
right.
of some churches are out there saying, we feel called through our reading of scripture and through our social issues that gay and lesbian pastors mm-hmm, are mm-hmm. valuable and important for our mm-hmm. denomination. And some that are maybe parts of small town America are saying, like, we cannot do that.
Yeah.
Not only from maybe our leadership, but also from our people.
Yeah.
Like, if we embrace this, what happens if 80% of our people leave?
Right.
Yeah. You know, like, and maybe their pastors even think, and I agree with that statement, but am I going to plant my flag there while I watch, again, 80% of my families walk out the door? Yeah. Okay. And that puts them in a very difficult position.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, and I think we're seeing from both the right and the left that the pastors sometimes don't quite line up with the theology or the worldview of their congregations. Mm-hmm. And that can make a lot of challenges. So I do think that if you're, this, you know, in this survey, I think like 60% of the pastors are saying, like, hey, denominations are going to change rapidly over the next 10 years. That may be true.
Mm-hmm.
So
do we think denominations are ultimately part of the problem?
Yes.
I mean, you've got, like, you know, Jesus in his great, what we call the high priestly prayer, as mm-hmm. he's having his final dinner with his disciples in John, he'll say, Lord, make them one as we are one.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's kind of central to his prayer as he's getting ready to go to the cross. So have we completely botched that? And you know, is that part of the problem? Have we just failed to be able to work together to find common solutions to disparate problems.
I mean, I think, you know, ultimately the, you know, social differences and stuff, it all comes back to theology, right? Like, mm-hmm. we all come to things with our own baggage of interpretations of scriptures that we grew up with most times, yeah. you know? And that is typically, I think, an interpretation that is presented to you through whatever denomination that you
yeah.
were attached to, you know, during your formative years. Or unless you're coming to this, you know, as an adult, you know, then that's completely different, mm-hmm. I think. But yeah, I mean, I think we're all sort of fed an interpretation that affects the way that we see the world and other Christians, yeah. you know?
Well, I think we've all been a part of like group decision making. Mm-hmm. It's yeah. awful.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Christianity is basically one big group project.
You know, if the three of us decided yeah. where to go to lunch after this, it'd be easy. Waffle House, you know, we'd
yeah,
figure that
obviously.
Out.
Yeah. yeah.
But when you multiply that number and all of a sudden there's 30 of us trying to decide where to go to lunch, you know, somebody's voice is not being heard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And eventually those voices say like, we're going to go where we want to go to lunch.
Yeah. yeah.
You know, like that's just the way it is. And I think parts of why the denomination split is because the minority voice feels like it's just no longer being heard.
Yeah.
And I think that's partly because the majority voice says, this works for me.
Yeah.
What we're doing works for me. Where we're going to lunch is where I want to go. So yeah. like, why would I have a problem with where I'm going to lunch?
Yeah.
And it comes from a place of like a hardness of like listening to the minority voices
mm-hmm.
more.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do think that's why the minority voices are getting louder and louder, good and bad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to see a lot more divisions and splits.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully, in Jesus, in the next life, we're going to see a lot more stitching up what was once ripped, you know? Yeah. So like, but hard to see how it is going to get healed here in America quickly and easily over yeah. the next couple of years. So
10 is what we've got.
Yeah. 2031.
Yikes.
Should we bury a time capsule or something?
Well, no, it
feels appropriate.
We'll do our, that'll be like our 14th anniversary episode.
Oh, sure. We still going to have stuff to talk about.
Oh yeah.
You know,
there's always going to be crazy people doing stuff in the name of Jesus.
That's true.
That's true. Yeah.
yeah.
Oh, you know, Christians, we can always depend on one thing from churches. Yeah. They're going to be weird. Yeah. People are going to still be trapped in Waffle House. Next time it'll be a Denny's.
That's right. Who knows? So 24 hours in a Denny's or 24 hours in a Waffle House? What's your...
I feel like a Denny's is slightly cleaner.
So yeah,
I
would choose the...
Yeah.
IHOP out of the three would be my first choice.
Yeah. Okay. They have plusher booths when we're talking yeah. about comfort long-term. Sure. Waffle House just has this cardboard. Like,
that's
yeah.
ouchy.
Yeah. Waffle House is more of like... It's more of a truck stop in yeah. my mind, so I think you're going
to... basically the back of a truck. Is Yeah. It's,
yeah.
yeah. that stopped yeah. on the side of the road.
Right.
I mean, I've been there, and like... the water is dirty when they bring it out.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I'm surprised these people on a smoke break left the Waffle House to take a smoke
yeah,
break. Not just have a cig in your mouth while you're cooking, flipping some waffles.
Yeah. yeah.
Tapping the ash off in your coffee as they go. Yeah.
yeah. All right. I think that brings us to a good
point. once we have denigrated the entire wait staff at Waffle House.
No. Listen, I love it.
Okay. Elise is here for your ash
really
and coffee.
I really am. It's my happy place.
All right. Well, hey, if you liked this episode or any of the Beyond Sunday material, we'd love for you to recommend and rate and review us on Apple iTunes. You can find our episodes at beyondsundaypodcast.com. And of course, let us know what you think. How do you feel the denominations are moving, or how have they been important in your own faith life? You can send us an email at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.